Next Chapter Podcasts.
Welcome to another episode of Thick Skin with Jock and Hawk. I'm your boy, Jock Jones.
And I'm that boy, the Troy Hawkins.
That boy. This show is called Thick Skin because you have to have thick skin to be in the spotlight. Whether you're a professional athlete like me and Hawk who played in the bigs or an entertainer, the media will come after you.
So you better get ready. We're here to tell it like it is, correcting the media when they get it wrong, and they do get it wrong, and dive deep into the world of sports, all sports and entertainment from an athlete's perspective.
We got a great show ahead for you tonight. We're going to talk a little bit about the Cowboys. A little bit about our boy Dusty, but we got a great show ahead for you tonight. Let's get it on, Hawk.
Thick skin. It's a good weekend of football in the NFL, playoff football at that. The Chiefs won. You know, the Texans won. Packers won. And who did the Packers beat? They beat them boys. They beat them little boys. They beat them little teeny tiny boys. So I was this past weekend, I was in Arizona with the MLB Develops doing Breakthrough Series.
All right.
And the director of the Breakthrough Series, Tony Regans, used to be the GM for the Los Angeles Angels. He is a huge Cowboy fan. And I always talk stuff to him. And the first thing he said to me, oh, you hadn't been texting me this year. You ain't sent me no text message. Blah, 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 blah. I said, you better shut up or y'all get upset. You better shut up. And he kept talking. And then it happened. And then they scored. And then the pick six. And then I started texting. And I started talking trash. And I told him, if the Cowboys lose, you better be on a red eye back to New York, because I'm letting you have it on Monday.
Hey, man, let me tell you something. You better than me, because I tell all my Cowboy friends here in San Diego and a lot of my friends on social media, hey, man, you guys are the boys. You them boys from week one to week about 13 or 14. Then they start that slide, and then January comes up. And that second week of January, boys, and they get real, real quiet. So when the Packers was taxing that behind, boy, I was shooting out text messages left or right. It is hilarious. It's like every January.
So who do you think is to blame for that? Laying an egg, them not showing up. I won't say they didn't show up. I don't like to say that. They wasn't prepared. What do you think went wrong?
You know what? I heard Damian Woody on a show earlier in the week, and he said my sentiments exactly. Right? Mm-hmm. He said, man, they just got their ass whooped. They didn't win any one-on-ones, right? Man for man, they just got beat up. And people like to blame the coaches. They like to blame the schemes. They like to blame this. They like to blame the weather. They like to blame, like, they just lined up and got beat at every position, like, the whole game until the Packers let up in the last, I'll say, the last
The beginning of the fourth quarter
is when they took the foot off the gas. But other than that, man, they beat Dallas in every way possible. And I'm pretty sure that McCarthy had a good game plan. I'm pretty sure they saw plenty of film. I'm pretty sure they thought they had good matchups all over the place. But the Packers just came in and everything was clicking. I mean, the quarterback had a near perfect quarterback passer rating. And, like, you can't prepare for that, bro.
No, you can't. And I look at it like this. I think fans underestimated the Packers' run offense. And they're overly excited about the way their defense had performed over the course of the season. Because we know they didn't perform against really good teams.
Never.
They only performed against the teams that had losing records. Yep. Not holding that against him, but we have to say it. So when you run the ball like that in NFL, like the Packers were running on them, they got them going downhill. They were going, all the running backs, Jones, they were running downhill. They had the entire defense on their heels. Well, okay, well, man, they're running the ball. They're getting 8-9 yards a carry. Now we have to put an extra man in the box. now we got all these one-on-one situations out with our wide receivers. And you just need your wide receivers to catch the ball at that point. And then they started to put a little pressure on Jordan Love, and he made every right decision in every throw. Every right decision in every throw. So I don't know if their game plan was the Cowboys' game plan was necessarily, you know, they didn't prepare. It's just like they had two facets of the game, the Packers, that they could not stop. When they decided to stop the run, they left their corners on the island. When they started to just, when they tried to go to the zone, they left their linebackers on the island. So it was just one of those things where they just got beat on the, they just got dominated on the ball on both sides. And it happens. It happens. I think I saw a stat where our boy had, the Cowboys have, the Packers have more wins at AT&T Stadium than the Cowboys have in the playoffs. How about that? Mm-hmm. That's crazy.
I saw that. That's the Cheesehead Stadium of the Midwest during January.
That's cold. And they also saw a stat about Michael Parsons.
Yep.
I'm trying to pull it up because I sent it to Tony Regan so he can stop complaining. It's embarrassing, blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. And it says Seth Walder, he's the NFL guy. Michael Parsons had a pass rush get off time of 0.93 seconds yesterday on average. Yep. That's far slower than his 0.79 average in the regular season. Mm-hmm. Probably can be partly attributed to the Dallas being behind field pass only situations.
Yep.
So like my boy Shannon Sharp said, Dak got a lot of empty calories. And you see the stat he threw for three empty calories. Ain't no fat.
Nope. And Parsons was a non-factor because they were double teaming him and they were triple teaming him and they were chipping him and they were just making sure just long enough to where Love could, you know, go through his progressions and his time was open. So he had no pressure on him most of the game. He had no pressure. I don't even believe they got a quarterback sack on Sunday.
Do you believe it's Jerry Jones' fault?
You know what? I'd say no, because he always puts him in a position to, he'll go out and try to get whatever it is they need. When you got an owner like that, I mean, you can't, I don't know if he tries to get involved with personnel decision once they get there, but he goes and gets whatever they need and you can't fault him for that.
No, you can't. I look at it this way. Oh, they said he's a general manager. He's the owner. He's a head coach and he's that, he can't be all those things at once. I look at it this way. Like you said, he doesn't throw any passes. He doesn't tackle anybody. He hadn't recorded 1 sack in the NFL.
Yeah, they weren't tackling anybody either, though.
He always put them in a situation. He always have guys on the team to put them in a position where they can win. Whether they win in a Super Bowl, that's on them. But as far as, you know, being in this big market in Dallas, the Metroplex, being self-proclaimed America's team, he's always putting a good product on the field.
All the time.
Today, like, what more can you ask for? I know they want championships, but I do know this. Out of all the professional sports, winning a championship is the hardest thing to do by far.
Of course.
But even more, I think it's even more challenging in the NFL because there's so much parity.
Well, there's parity, but you get – in any other sport, you got to – 2 out of 3, you got a 3 out of 5, you got a 4 out of 7, right? NFL, well, if you ain't got it that week, you out. You're out.
No.
You know what I'm saying? No. So it ain't no 2 out of 3. It's hey, we lining up with you on Sunday and may the best man win.
So we're going to compare Jordan Love to Aaron Rodgers. Mm-hmm. They compared them. I don't, the only comparison I have about those guys is I don't think Jordan Love is a risk taker, gunslinger like Brett Favre was. Brett Favre didn't mind throwing an interception. He did. He did not throw. He didn't mind throwing an interception.
He never met a throw he didn't like.
No, he never had a throw he didn't like. He was going to try it.
Yep.
And you know what? If he threw an interception, you know what? It never gave him the. He never got. He was never in fear of throwing an interception.
He was never gun shy, bro. He was a gunslinger.
Yeah, he was a gunslinger. I don't look at Jordan Love as a gunslinger.
No, no. And I'll say this. Jordan Love is relatively new. This is really his first full year as a quarterback. He has to be careful with the ball. He's still maybe a little bit unsure of himself. He's getting more confident, you know, as the weeks go by. But maybe 2 or 3 years from now, he might become that. But right now, he takes care of the ball and he makes sure he's, you know, he gets into the open man.
Well, the one thing we witnessed this weekend at the team that took care of the ball won the game.
Absolutely.
Turnovers in the playoffs will kill you.
Absolutely.
And we move on to the Steelers-Bills game. Me, personally, I didn't think Steelers had a chance. I really did not think they had a chance, and simply because the Bills had gotten better each and every week. They got better. And when you have a quarterback like Mr. Allen, he can make every throw off platform. He's big. He's physical. He's fast. He's not afraid to take a hit. Mm-hmm. And he can throw the damn ball the length of a football field. So, I mean, and he makes really good decisions. They played a good game. They played a good game against an inferior club.
Yeah.
But they got a dogfight next week because there's for the Chiefs, it's a dogfight for them as well. There's no, oh, well, our team, the opponent we're playing is, you know, they're not used to the cold weather. No, it's cold weather against cold weather next Sunday.
Listen, they know each other, man. They've hooked up a couple times in the postseason. They know what each other is about. They know their tendencies. They know their strengths. They know their weaknesses. They always have a special contest when those two guys hook up because they're both tough. They both will their teams to win. They both know how to, you know, distribute the ball. Sometimes Allen gets a little careless because he was one of the top two quarterbacks in the league with turnovers this year. So, you know, like you said, it's going to come down to the team that takes care of the ball the best and makes the least mistakes.
It always does. Mm-hmm. You have to take care of the football. Mm-hmm. You have to take care of the football. Mm-hmm. So after that game, the Bills beat the Pittsburgh Steelers. Mike Tomlin, is he the longest tenured head coach in the NFL? If not, he's very close to the top. During his post-game interview, mm-hmm. reporter asked him about his future in Pittsburgh. And he immediately created his own meme. Because the way he looked, his eyes.
Yeah, he was like a little sheepish little boy.
So he was like, "You're stupid. I've asked this question all season. I'm exiting stage left right now.
I'm out of here."
What do you have on it? Do you think he handled it in a non-professional way, or how do you think he handled that situation?
I think he handled it in a Mike Tomlin way. You never hear Mike Tomlin with lightning rod quotes. You never hear Mike Tomlin in spats with the media, right? He's very articulate. He takes his time when he speaks. He speaks eloquently. He speaks respectfully. And he just, you know, he's like a Bill Belichick where he doesn't give you much, but he does it in a more tactful way, right? So when he doesn't want to answer questions, he knows how to get around it. And when he's done, he's done. So I think he handled it in the way he thought he did. I had no problems with it.
Yeah, I think he was entering his last year of his contract mm-hmm. and the lady asked a legitimate question, but there was a time and place for everything. Yep. And like you said, he's always a stand-up guy. Yep. Always a stand-up guy. So if he felt the need to exit that interview before he said something that he probably was going to regret, more power to
exactly.
him. Exactly. And I wish people would listen to the interview because their PR person asked, "Are there any more questions?" Something similar to that. And then she threw that out there. She threw a lob right. to him. And he's like, "You know what? I waited. That's right. all you got? you say that question for my off-season interview.
Basically, that's something you need to ask the owners of the front office. Right now, I'm talking about the team. You know what I'm saying? We just came off a tough loss.
That's it. But at some point, he's going to have to answer that question. He wasn't ready to answer that question at a particular time, but at some point, he's going to have to answer that question, his future. And I don't think, for me, I don't think he needed to answer that question right then. It was all about the game, not about him. And like you said, he's that coach. He always makes it about his players, not him.
And you know what? I don't even think he has to answer the question, Hawk. I think the answer will come with whatever the owners decide. They'll answer the question for the media. Do you understand what I'm saying?
He might do an exit interview or something, and it's going to come up. And maybe he's saving that quote for a reporter that he like, one of his boys in Pittsburgh. Maybe. We don't know. But he was entitled to exit stage left with no problem at all.
Yep.
We get to the Chiefs. How about them Chiefs? It was cold in Kansas City, boy. I don't know if you ever catch me watching anybody do anything in that type of cold.
No. Unless I'm in a box. But
as the kids say, no. Nope. As the media has been very, very critical of Tua's performance. Yeah. You think it's warranted, or do you think that the media has been the media and just trying to pile on because they're overmatched?
Some of it goes on him, right? Because he's out there playing. He's out there decision. Some of it goes on him. Some of it is the other team. Some of it is his own team, right? But, like, he's no different than any other quarterback in the league. He's going to make some good plays. He's going to make some bad plays. They're going to win some. They're going to lose some. He's not like a Josh Allen or Patrick Mahomes where he's going to put the team on his back and carry them and do all the things that these guys do. He's got an offense where he's got some weapons. He's going to get them the ball. They're going to do their thing. He's got a running game that's going to take some of the heat off the passing after the pass rush in the passing game. But they expect him to put that team on his back, and that's just I just don't think that he's a type of that type of quarterback. That's just my opinion.
I'm with you. He's not as dynamic as those two guys you mentioned, and Allen and Mahomes. I know he can spin the ball.
Of course,
he has a good touch.
Yes,
I think Spagnuolo, the Chiefs defensive coordinator, did an incredible job on confusing Tua. I think he did an incredible job being physical with the wide receivers at the line of scrimmage. You had Jarius Sneed on Tyreek Hill, and the only play that they scored on was the play when he lined up on the far left. He went across. Legarius Sneed had to stay on the left, and McDuffie had to pick him up, and you know he threw the pass downfield for the touchdown. But I think the Chiefs was more physical at the line of scrimmage, and I think that was the turning point of the game. Miami defense actually played pretty damn well.
For sure. They've been playing well.
They kept the Chiefs out of the end zone. Bucker kicked four field goals. Mm-hmm. He kept them out of the end zone. Mm-hmm. I don't think Tua has been as prolific as he probably was projected to be because of the concussions and his injuries a couple of years ago. And he ran his longest run in that game for the season. And that was 10 yards. So he's staying in the pocket. You're getting the ball out of his hands as quick as possible and making sure that he stays upright. But I'm not giving Tua all the blame. I think the blame is collective throughout the organization, the coaches and the players. But I also think it's just like when they played in week maybe 8, I think, in London. They were just overmatched. Like, they're overmatched. It's like some games you have an opportunity to win and some you have no chance. And I don't think the Miami Dolphins had a chance to win in Kansas City last Saturday night in those conditions, because I think the Chiefs would have beat them had they played in Miami or in Kansas City, but they were just, they were overmatched. And
I will say, and I hate, I'm going to say this, and I hate that I'm saying it, but I'm going to say it anyway. But they had, you know, some of their key players get injured on the defensive side. Miami did, but everybody's hurt in January, right? But I mean, I want to point that out that they did have some key guys missing on their side of the ball, but you still got to line up and play.
The Bills are wounded on defense. They're wounded also. But again, it's January. Guys are going to be hurt, injured. You're going to have some guys playing hurt, and you're going to have some guys that won't be able to suit up and go out and help their team. Through the midst of the playoffs, before it started, we had Nick Saban. Yeah, Roll Tide. All of a sudden said, you know what? He blew the whole NCAA in the sports world to deuces like this. He did. Like, I'm out. He did. I've done everything I could do with this and for the game of football. And I'm going to ride off into the sunset.
Yeah.
He had a legendary career.
He sure did.
He's put countless young men in the NFL. Yep. He did a lot of things in his personal life.
Yep.
Help people that he never wanted the notoriety about.
Yep.
He wanted to try to do it anonymous. And I admire that.
Yep.
Because, you know, like, we were not ones who seek out the, you know, the media and all that good stuff when we do something for somebody. Mm-hmm. And he was the same. And since he stepped down in Alabama, he's, you know, some of those stories have come to light.
Right.
And it reaffirms to me why I like Nick Saban.
You know what, man? I'll tell you when I really gained respect for Coach Saban, because I just watching his press conferences and how he is on the sideline, I thought he was a little abrasive, right? But I can't remember the name of the player. It was probably 4 or 5 years ago, maybe. Player got in trouble, and then, you know, of course, the media wants him to take the kid's scholarship and get him out of the program, right? And they ask him about the kid, and he goes, "What do you want me to do? Do you want me to take his scholarship? Do you want me to send him home, you know, so that he can get in more trouble? What do you want me to do with him, right?" He goes, "I'm not going to do that. We're going to handle this in-house. I'm going to talk with him. I'm going to, you know, we're going to discipline him how we feel like we need to discipline him. But I'm not going to turn my back on him." And Hawk, when I saw that interview, when I heard him say that, I gained so much more respect for Coach Saban than I had, you know, prior to that. So, to just think that he's probably the best head coach in Alabama history when they had Coach Bryant. I mean, that's saying a lot about what Coach Saban did in Tuscaloosa.
Yeah, and you have some some dealings in Tuscaloosa because Jock yep. Jones Jr. graduated from Alabama.
Yep.
And you spent some time down there when Jr. was a student.
Yep.
You have a connection to Roll Tide.
I do. I spent a lot of money there.
Hey, it's only money, bro.
I know.
Money.
Yep.
Got a good education.
Yeah, my son was a little crushed when Coach Saban stepped down. So,
yeah, I'm sure most of the Roll Tide fans were crushed. And there was a time in the guy's life where, you know what, like, what more could he accomplish there? Like, what can he do? And then you bring in a coach who just played for the national championship. I mean, like, at least they did that right. I mean, I think they got that right. I think they got it right.
Yeah, time will tell, but they could have. It's not a bad decision. It's actually a pretty good decision.
It's obvious the guy can recruit, mm-hmm. which is major when you're at a big school like that. You have to be able to recruit because you have other schools that are pretty darn good as well. He did a great job at Washington recruiting and going in the portal and recruiting. I don't know if he's going to have to go in the portal much at Alabama to do some recruiting. I think he's going to be all right. What do you think?
He's going to have to go in the portal because there are some guys that – got in the portal and Coach Saban left. So he may have to, he lost two key receivers. So he's going to he might have to kick some cans down in the portal to replace some of those guys.
They'll be back because the NC is all about the highest bidder. And I don't see Alabama losing out.
We'll see.
To Georgia or a Clemson or a LSU on a receiver when they know where their competition is.
They've been losing out the last couple of years with Coach Saban there. So we'll see.
Really? Where they lose out at? They still playing in the Final Four every year. Jeez.
Yeah, but still. But I know we were talking a little bit about the pressure that Coach DeBoer is facing in Alabama. Those are some huge shoes to fill at such a football powerhouse. Come from Washington where, yeah, they want you to win and it's cool if you win. And they went to a national championship and came up short. But, I mean, Alabama, you're expected to compete for a national championship every year. No ifs, ands, whats, or buts about it.
Rightfully so, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, they're paying to get players to come there and I mean, they have to win.
For sure.
I'm not an Alabama fan. And that's not because I don't like Alabama.
Right.
It's because I'm not a college football guy.
Right.
I mean, I'll watch the playoffs.
Yep.
But that's about it. That's my extent of watching college football. Everybody, you got to go to LSU. I ain't got to go watch no 18 to 22. Nothing. I'm sorry. Yeah. But play baseball. That's it.
Yep.
That's all I want to see them do. Yep. Maybe in college basketball. I take that back. College basketball because Kansas is playing right now. Oklahoma State.
Yep.
Yeah. I'm a big KU fan.
Yeah. But you had a tie there just like I had a tie in Alabama. So, yep.
Our boy, Johnny B.
Oh, man.
Went to the front office and with San Francisco Giants, one of his few organizations where he managed the team.
Yep.
And you know, we can sit here and talk all day and never say a bad thing about Dusty Baker because I look at him as my baseball dad. I know you feel the same about him.
Yep.
He's just an incredible, fantastic, amazing human being.
Yep.
That's what he is.
Yep.
That's what he is.
And whatever we say about him and whatever anyone says about him, I think he's better than what we ever could say about him. Because of the things that he's accomplished as not only as a manager, but should he get slighted as a player? He went a World Series as a player. He was a pretty good, you know, outfielder.
You tell me like I had this.
Oh yeah, he had it all. He could run, he could throw, and he could hit, and he could hit for power. Right?
I said, "What's that, Dusty?" He said, "That wrist, that wrist action." He's like, "You got that wrist? I had that wrist." I'm like, "Okay, that's how it worked." Like that. I like it.
Yeah, man. He's a baseball lifer, man. And he can't – I talked to him. I got a chance, of course, just like you did, but I got a chance to know him really well after playing for him and then coaching with him and then keeping contact with him. We talk at least once a week. As a matter of fact, I talked to him today and I talked to him yesterday, and I congratulated him on getting back in the game and getting into a position to where, you know – probably would be a little less taxing on his body, but he can still be in the game that he loves. And he's so excited to, you know, try to help shape that roster and help shape their team and get those guys back to the playoffs and eventually a World Series. So
I always think about baseball and how we love the passion we have for this game.
Mm-hmm.
But that love and passion we have is better when you have guys like Dusty in it.
Yep.
It's much better.
Yep.
It's much better.
Yep.
And it's even better when you can just pick up the phone and call him and be like, "Hey, Dusty." So you know what that means? We got to get Dusty on the show. And I know he's already said he's down to get on the show. Yep. We're going to make that happen. But you know what? I don't know if I was the happiest guy. I know you're pretty damn happy too when he won the World Series.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I'll stand here and say today I shed a tear because I've fought with people talking shit about Dusty.
Same here, man.
His inability to win.
Same here.
And they put him in a situation where they thought that he wasn't going to succeed.
Of course.
He exceeded expectations.
Every time.
Every time.
With the Cubs, with the Giants, you know what I'm saying?
Yep.
With the Astros. I mean, everywhere he went, with the Nationals. He did well everywhere he went. And when he left them in a good space. But when he left, they went downhill. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, and I was just talking to Brian. I was talking to Brian before you hopped on earlier. It's like Dusty's a very, very bright human being. But people make him out to be a dunce. People make him out to be a dummy. He's not. Man, I see articles all the time when he doesn't know how to run a bullpen. He doesn't know how to do this. He doesn't know how to coach in.
My boy Dusty hard on the bullpen, but guess what? He's different from nobody else. He ride the hot hand.
Exactly.
I'm a hot hand. Why would I put the guy there that's cold?
Exactly.
Yeah. It's like he's the only manager ever to run a bullpen into the ground. Like, no. Well, that's what we're there for. We're there to be ran into the ground if that's what needs to happen.
And if you don't use him, then why didn't you use him? You understand what I'm saying? So
in a no lose win situation.
No win.
I always we talk about Dusty. And when he managed me into 04 and 05 with the Cubs. And I grew up 30 minutes. I grew up 30 minutes from Chicago. So when I went to play in Chicago with the Cubs, I was pretty much at home.
Yep.
And where I grew up, it's called Chocolate City. So everybody looks like us.
Yep.
And I would go home all the time, and it never fails. Everybody wanted to know how was Dusty Baker. And Dusty and I lived in the same building. It was him, myself, Corey Patterson, and Michael Barrett. Michael Barrett. We all lived in the same building. And I would tell people, I said, Dusty can come right here in the middle of our neighborhood, Terrytown,
yep,
in Gary, Indiana. Terrytown Liquors. Terrytown Liquor, and then right next to it is Terrytown Food, and right across the street is the Post, the Legion.
Mm-hmm.
And there's guys out there cooking. There's guys out there standing out, drinking all day long, doing what they do, hanging out on a corner, talking trash, you know, hollering at every car that come down the road. Yep. Dusty can come on any given day and do that, and you would not know he's not from that neighborhood. You would not know he's not born and raised in Gary, Indiana, in the 219 in the region. You would not know that.
He'd fit right in.
And he would fit right in, and was at Southeast San Diego, right?
Yep, right.
Right.
Where my homeboys met him, and they swear by him. They always ask me, hey, man, how's Uncle Dusty doing? Man, tell Uncle Dusty I said hello. Because
Dusty got a lot of nephews, don't he?
Oh, yeah. He got way more nephews than Snoop.
And then I follow that up with Dusty can go to the White House,
yep,
and help solve some of the world problems. This is not the United States problems, the world problems. He is, for me, the Renaissance man. True Renaissance.
I'm glad you said that, because I was gonna say it if you didn't. He always tells me, with that toothpick in his mouth, I'm a Renaissance man, huh?
And he is. And he liked to eat too.
Oh.
He liked to go down. He liked to eat. He taught me something. You'll never bring food in the clubhouse unless you bring somebody else something to eat.
He makes sure his players never go hungry.
Never go hungry. He spent $200-$400 a day,
mm-hmm,
making sure,
mm-hmm,
the guys had some extra food to eat. We didn't need it, but if he went to eat somewhere before he got to the ballpark, he was bringing food to the clubhouse.
Extra food
for everybody.
Yep. Yeah, and if he was in the city and he caught wind of what you like or something that you like there, he was gonna go to that place or have somebody go to that place, and he was gonna have somebody put it on your chair or in your locker, and you know he's gonna make sure he took care of his players, man. And that's another thing that I can say about Dusty, man, is he paid attention to his players. He was an ultimate players coach, and like, if he knew anything about anybody, he was going to make sure that he took care of them in whichever way he could. And I always respected him for that.
Yeah, I got a great story, like, and then we'll wrap it up.
But, okay.
In 2004, the last game of the season, I think I had 49 games finished, and I had started getting big bonuses every time, every five appearances, every five games finished. So I just had to be the last pitcher. Whether I got a save or not, I just needed, yeah, to be the five,
yeah,
last pitcher.
Yeah.
And I had 49 going into game 162. And get into the last inning. They got a 2-run lead. They call down. They get Kyle Farnsworth up. Mm-hmm. Farnsworth decided not to come to the bullpen that day. I mean, he was in the training room, wasn't feeling up to it, so he didn't show up. So Rothschild calls down to Porky. Porky, get Farnsy up. Farnsy not here. Mm. The fuck you mean he not here? He's not here. Hang up the phone. Hang up the phone. And they call back, get Hawkins up. $2 million appearance, bro.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
But Dusty had no clue. But get him in. So I go in, get the save. Game's finished. Mm-hmm. You know, 2 weeks later, at some point, they have their organizational meetings, and I guess it was brought up. And Dusty called me, was like, "Hey, man, I didn't know that was a big appearance for you." I was like, "You wasn't supposed to know." I was like, "I was cool. I'm better that I got it, but I was cool if I didn't."
Right.
Like, more power to you, young man. More power to you. So I always thank Dusty for that, and I always thank Kyle Farnsworth for deciding, you know, he wasn't feeling up to it that day.
Yep. Oh, man. Yeah.
But that's it. It's always a pleasure playing with Dusty, man. I mean, Mike Jackson always told me, "Hey, man, when you get to free agency, you get a chance. You got to play. Mm-hmm. You got to go play for Dusty wherever he is. You got to." And my first time getting to free agency, lo and behold, I get to go to Chicago with Johnny B.
Mm-hmm.
Johnny B.
Mm-hmm.
Johnny B. And it's funny, somebody called Dusty about me. Oh, no, Dusty called Dan Gladden.
Okay.
When I was signing free agency, he was like, because him and Gladden cool. And he was like, "Hey," he's like, "Danny, what you got on LaTroy Hawkins?" Danny G tells him, "Hey, when he started licking his finger and he got the cotton mouth, get him out of there." I'm like, "All right, 3-2, I'm glad you paid attention to your boy." You got a good schedule coming up this week for the NFL playoffs.
Yep.
Rolling with the Chiefs.
Of course.
And I think I'm going to take the Texans.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And I think I'm going to take the Packers over the 49ers. I'm going with the underdogs. Who you got?
I got the 49ers. I'm rolling with the Texans. And, of course, I got to roll with the Chiefs. If my Chargers ain't in it, then I got to roll with the Chiefs.
All right. You better. You better, Joker.
I got to roll with the Chiefs, man.
You better, Joker. But it's another good episode, man. A thick skin.
Man, always good to get on here.
Did we have our thick skin moment? Who's our thick skin guy of the week? It has to be. I got to go with Mike Tomlin.
Yeah, we got to give Mike Tomlin the thick skin of the week award.
Thick skin of the week award, yeah. Just because. You know what? He created his own meme in 2 seconds. He was like this.
Dog, that look. Yeah,
bro.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That look was hilarious. Like he had his hand in a cookie jar. Like, oh, man, ECB. He was like, "Hey," he was like Red's dad in Friday. No.
No. Why you keep coming down here messing with these folk?
Oh, man.
Sometime in the near future, in the very near future, really good guests coming up.
Yep.
Getting to be baseball season. I'm going to take this show on the road a little bit.
Yep.
Double J. Deuces, my man.
Hoggy, see you next week, man.
Next Chapter Podcasts.